is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And instead of making me angry, something in your newscast filled me with warm and fuzzy feelings.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's unusual.
I heard you mention Chum Salmon.
Yes.
I have very fond memory of Chum Salmon.
Is that right?
You want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Summer of 1985. I'm 23 years old. I've been interning and working at King 5 for $4 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to be a producer, but my dream was to be on air.
Sure.
King 5 gets the rights to broadcast the Long Acres Mile, and they knew that I probably knew more about horse racing than anyone in the building.
Probably since the time you were seven.
Probably. So I'm 23 years old, Ursula, and they made me the on-track reporter for their coverage of the Long Acres Mile. And hey, will you see if you can find the stretch call on YouTube of the 1985 Long Acres Mile? So, great call. Gary Henson was the track announcer, and Chum Salmon was the local horse.
Oh, I was going to say, what is the connection with Chum? Okay.
Yeah, Chum was based at Long Acres, and there are all these big invaders from California, from Santa Anita and Hollywood Park, and you got it?
Well, say it again. 1982?
Five.
85?
1985 Long Acres Mile. And anyway, Chum Salmon's in about sixth place on the far turn, makes this heroic run down the home stretch, passes all of these invaders from out of state, and Gary Henson's caller, remember, he's Chum Salmon! And then I get to do the interview on the track with Gary Bays and with the trainer. And I said, it was a Chum from behind victory.
And so the next day,
the big headline in the Seattle Times, Chum from behind. And they even gave me credit for
it. That's awesome.
I know. It's like my first media breakthrough. And
right,
I remember
23. That's remarkable.
Yeah. And I remember driving home from Long Acres and I was on top of the world because I thought, this is it. This is my breakthrough. I'm going to be the young hotshot on air, too young to get a gig like this. And they never gave me another chance at anything after that.
What?
I know. I had to go and create my own stuff after that. But that's what I thought of when you mentioned Chum Salmon.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
For sure, 85.
Yeah.
I can't find 85.
Really? That's too bad.
We'll keep searching.
Please. That's no big deal. Story's over. But yeah, that was fun. That was a fun summer. That was a fun time in life. Climbing the ladder. Creating opportunities. Oh, I love that. Okay. Now, a little closer to 2019 stuff. The coach of the Washington State Cougars, my youngest daughter, who is a Coug, she and a bunch of her Coug friends, they all graduated, I think, 3 years ago. But they all got an Airbnb and went down to Scottsdale this weekend.
Oh, did they really?
To go to the Coug game at Arizona State.
Okay, that would be a really good time.
Yeah, which was, and she's...
She survived.
Yeah, I think so. You know, when Cougs get together, it's usually about community service.
Okay, exactly. Especially when the Cougs and ASU get together.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the funny thing is, she and I, when we did our father-daughter trip to look at colleges, we ended up going to Phoenix and looking at Arizona State. And
that's a big school.
It is. And it's a big party school, too.
I didn't party that much.
Oh, that's right.
That's where I went.
My wife reminded me that you were a Sun Devil. Did you get your degree there?
Yes.
How did you go there all 4 years?
No. Two. The last two.
Okay. Because you went to Bellevue. Okay. Yeah. Okay. What was your degree in?
Media communications.
Look at you. And now you're living out that dream.
I am.
Every
I should probably tell
day.
Them that I actually did it.
You should. Just don't tell them you're on my show. Then you get excommunicated by the colleges and high schools you attend.
Maybe not in Arizona.
Yeah, that's true. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So anyway, the Cougars lost again. And Mike Leach, the coach of the Cougs, he says that he's figured out his players need fewer distractions.
Well, because I think we entertain too many distractions. And if I had it to do over again, I would have done it when we started camp. I think we entertain too many distractions. I think we're a little too distracted right now, but I think there is a team-wide determination to be less distracted.
So he has banned all of his players from doing any social media until the end of the football season.
How effective do you think that's going to be?
Well, I'm sure they have some burner phones
Supposedly, most of them haven't posted since the end of September. Well, they've still lost since then.
True. Right? They've lost three in a row, I believe. You know, this is a real dilemma for parents. If you've got, you know, middle school or high school kids, I think it's a real dilemma for parents, for people like Mike Leach. And I faced, in a very real way, this issue, 2.5 years ago, when my girls' basketball team was going to the state tournament. And I really thought we had a chance to win state. And I was trying to think of ways to maximize it. And I talked to a coach, because I hadn't been to state in 4 years. And so phones weren't as ubiquitous the last time I had gone. So I talked to coaches who had been there the year before, who were friends of mine. And one of them, he had a big trash bag. And before they got on the bus, you open the bag, put your phone in. And he confiscated their phones for the duration of their time at state. And I thought about that he's a very successful coach and a very good man. And he said that, you know, to eliminate the distraction, to have the girls just focus on the moment and the experience. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down with my captains, who were very bright and just thoughtful kids. And they persuasively with me made the argument that kids get so twitchy and nervous about not having their phone that in and of itself, losing their phone would be much more of a distraction. Now, and they said, how about certain restrictions and certain windows, but taking it away for the full 3 days, you're going to have girls who, their mind's going to be on, I don't have a phone.
And they make a great argument. There have actually been studies. It's called nomophobia.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's a very
I know it.
Real thing.
And like I said, these were really smart, thoughtful kids that I was talking with. And they made the case so compellingly that I did. I just had, you know, windows of restriction, but windows, you know, in the evening or between 9 and 10 p.m.,
yeah,
you can do it, and we won the state championship.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know about the Mike Leach thing.
And does it also include him not doing social media?
He has not posted. He's very active on social media, but it specifically does not include the coaches because social media is a very important recruiting tool. And so as they're in the high school football recruiting season, he would not make a blanket restriction on his coaches. Next up in the Fastest 15, I was talking last hour about the Seahawks and how, you know, it just brings together. When so many other things divide us, it's cool. The Seahawks get, I don't know what they got yesterday. I haven't seen the overnights, but their games get something like a 70 share on local TV.
They have been making it, all the games, so exciting this year.
Yes. one of the things I love about sports that can galvanize us. The other thing is it can reveal the absolute triumph of the human spirit and the rewarding of unbelievable diligence. You hear about this marathon runner this weekend?
Yes.
Eliud Kipchoge did something that was thought to be beyond human potential. The Kenyan in a marathon in Vienna, Austria, for the first time, broke the two-hour mark for a marathon.
Incredible.
Let me put this in perspective. Have you ever tried running a mile?
Yes, I have run a mile.
Do you know what your time would be for running a mile?
So horrible. Let's just put it, yeah, it's not good. I jogged a mile.
When I was 17, I would run Green Lake. I was as fit as can be. I weighed 140 pounds. I've put on 20 since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I could run about a 6.5 minute mile around Green Lake. Not even that, probably closer to 7 minutes. Because it's a 2-point-something mile
loop. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but that's pretty fast.
For me, a 7-minute mile was phenomenal. It took a lot of work to get there. This guy, this Kenyan dude, he ran a 4-minute and 36-second mile. But he strung 26 of those together.
That's amazing.
Without a break. That's 26 consecutive 4.5-minute miles. That is a full sprint, pretty much, for 26.2 miles. And it's just mind-boggling. And it also, you know, raises the question, what is there? There is something that is some number that is the furthest we can push human physiology. I mean, nobody's ever going to run. I don't know what the 100-meter record is, but it's, you know, 9.7 or something. You know, nobody's ever going to run 100 meters in 8 seconds. But can you get it down to 9.6 or 9.5?
It's 9.58.
Okay, yeah, I was close.
Yeah.
Okay, but what's the absolute limit of human physiology? Because records always are coming down.
Now, without any help, too. I mean, it has to be pure.
Yeah, the distance runners, I doubt if they're steroid-induced. But, you know, there's some things. If you compete at altitude, there was the blood doping where you would remove some of your blood and then re-inject it at the higher altitude, but it'd be more oxygen-rich and all of that.
It's crazy.
Yeah, they're all
kind of... I remember, I think this guy talked about it, but there was like a wind assistance type thing
Yeah, there was something about the course or something where it's not going to be recognized, but it was still the full distance. But that...
There was
4.5 minute miles, 26 of them strung together. That's impossible.
Our assistant program director here, he was telling us that he won the Bellingham Marathon a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that he was running with this group and he was kind of profiting off of their wind assistant. I don't know. He was trying to explain it to me. I don't know how it works.
You do some drafting.
But he was running. It's crazy though. All the little things that go into
and
making that happen.
Buckaloo, what would you say his time was? It was 2:37, right? No, 2:47.
Yes, 2:47.
That's incredible. A 2-hour, 47-minute marathon. But that's 6.5 or 6 minute, 20-second miles. 26 of them strung together, back to back to back. But this Kenyan dude, 4.5 minute miles. It's freakish. It's cool, though. I just think people who can push human physiology like that are very cool and admirable. Next up, in the fastest 15, a 13 or 12-year-old middle school student has been arrested after she made a gun symbol out of her fingers and pointed it at other students. This happened in Overland Park, Kansas. The spokesperson for the schools said that... Do we have audio for this?
Nope, I told you. Nope.
Oh, I thought you said it was boring, but I thought we were still going to play it.
No.
Okay. Spokesperson said...
It's boring.
See, Nicole cares more about the show quality
good.
Than I do.
This is good. Okay. She says it's boring. It's not worth airing. Okay.
Okay. Hey, I'll just quote here. They said that it was a municipal police department decision and that the police department will ultimately decide if they're going to send it through to the prosecutors. But she's facing the possibility of a felony charge for making a finger gun out of her thumb and forefinger at school and pointing it at other students. And again, we wonder why we have a generation of kids who are so riddled with anxiety and they can't sleep at night and they're taking all kinds of anti-anxiety meds. It's because of these policies that turn absolute molehills into the Himalayas. So, felony charge could come down against the girl. And then finally, a armed robber went into a Dollar Tree store, pulled his gun, pointed it at the clerk, and the clerk had a gun, shot and killed the armed robber. Now the siblings of the armed robber, they are very upset because this is their second sibling to die because of gun violence, and they are very upset that the clerk defended his own life and that of his customers by shooting and killing their brother.
He got some responsibility, but not all. Right and wrong is wrong. That was wrong for that clerk to shoot my brother in the chest. Yes, he's robbing y'all. Oh, well. Call the police. That's what y'all supposed to do. Y'all not supposed to take matters in y'all own hands.
So the sister's response was, yes, he's robbing them. Oh, well. Call the police. Yeah, the police can't get there in time if the clerk gets shot in the head by an armed robber. And the robber made a call to 911 right after he shot and killed the clerk called 911 right after he shot and killed the robber.
I tried to attempt to rob me over here at Dollar General in Gettysburg, 2228. North Gettysburg, came in with a firearm, threatened to take money out the drawer, pointed a gun at me and my, me and my staff member.
How long ago did this happen?
It just happened just now. He pointed a gun at me. I had a firearm on me. I pulled my firearm and I shot him in self-defense.
Okay, was it a white male or a black male?
He's a black male.
What color shirt's he wearing?
He's laying in front of my store. Come on here. Just there.
You shot him?
He came in with a firearm and pointed a gun at me. I need ambulances here right now.
Okay, are you hurt?
I'm not. He's laying down in front of my door on the sidewalk.
Are there any other customers inside the store?
I'm standing with one customer right now. She was in the back.
So he may have saved the life of his customer. He may have saved his own life, but the armed robber's siblings are upset that their brother got shot. I understand them being upset the brother got shot. I don't understand them blaming the guy who shot him. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Okay, Ursula's going to check the news. And then I'm going to talk to a local politician. I found this to be very refreshing. In a time when government believes it can tell us how to think, how to vote, one politician is taking a stand against that. Details. You're not going to want to miss this. Coming up next.
There's a long line of cars and they're trying to get through.
It's an issue I've been talking about an awful lot lately. There are few things more perilous to a free society than having two of our most powerful forces, government and media, collude to control our thinking. And we've seen that in so many ways. One that's particularly important coming up is $30 car tabs. Almost every major media outlet has taken a stance against $30 tabs. It'll be ruinous. It'll be devastating, catastrophic. And you have governments in the form of city and county councils that have taken a position against $30 tabs for the same reason, telling us that it will destroy our infrastructure, housing prices will collapse. And when you see media and government colluding so ardently for something, you should maybe think about going in the opposite direction. And that's why I absolutely am in favor of $30 tabs. But to illustrate what I'm talking about, something happened really interesting a couple nights ago at a Lacey City Council member meeting. Let me take you down to Lacey, where Councilman Lenny Greenstein joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Lenny, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you are a councilman in Lacey, and it sounds like you agree with me that there are problems with government telling us, recommending to us how we should think, how we should vote.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been on the council, this is my eighth year, and I've taken a firm stance the entire time that we should not be passing resolutions on things that are going to go on the ballot for the voters to decide. It's not our job to vote for them or to decide how they should vote.
You can certainly do it as a private citizen in your private time, right?
Absolutely. And I think each council member on any issue that's important to them, they should take a stand personally. I just think it's inappropriate when we do it as a body.
Now, and I don't know how you stand personally on $30 tabs, and frankly, I don't care. It sounds to me like that's almost irrelevant to this larger point that you're trying to make.
It is irrelevant because I take the stance on things that I agree with or disagree with. My personal feelings on it are completely irrelevant. My issue is the elected body of a council taking a position on something that the voters are going to have the opportunity to vote on.
And your ideological attitude and position about that is rooted in what?
I don't know what it's rooted in necessarily. It's probably rooted in my basic conservative philosophy that we have an initiative process so that the voters can make decisions. And I don't believe they elect us to educate them or to tell them how to vote on an issue. I think they elect us to make decisions on behalf of the city as their representative.
Now, obviously, some of your fellow council members disagree. This is Linda Zeman, who spoke at the meeting in question, and she does think that it's your role to tell us how to view an issue. Here's what she said.
The difficulty that I see with this is, as Councilmember Cox said, we don't want to tell anyone how to vote. That's not our job. And I certainly don't want to give my personal opinion about something because that is also not my job. However, as a council, there's difficulty with providing messaging and providing education around how this will affect because we can't do those things. We can't campaign for an initiative. And this is the only tool that's available for us to share that sort of information.
Now, she said we can't campaign for an initiative, but she put air quotes with her fingers around campaign, which certainly, viewing the video as I did, makes it look like she realizes they are campaigning while her words say we can't campaign.
Again, individually we can campaign, but not from the day.
Right. That's my point. This was on city time, which means it's on taxpayer time when they were
exactly
sitting and advocating for this position against $30 tabs, right?
Absolutely, which is why I'm opposed to it. I don't believe it's what the taxpayers want us to do. I don't believe it's what the voters want us to spend our time doing.
So then it got really interesting when it came time for the vote. There were six of you at this council meeting, I believe. Five council members and the mayor, is that right?
The mayor, in the case of Lacey, we have the mayor is just a council member. He's chosen to be mayor by the council.
Okay. And you need a majority for this to pass. And and as you said, you didn't vote no on and it can get a little confusing. So the resolution was to be against $30 tabs, and a no vote would mean you are for $30 tabs. And you didn't take a position either way, nor did two of your fellow council members. And here is how the vote went down.
So it has been moved and seconded to for the council to pass this resolution against 976. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
Opposed. Do we need a raise of hands?
I don't think so. All those abstain?
I abstain.
Abstain. Mm-hmm. Abstain.
So the motion passes.
How does it pass? There's only three votes.
I just heard three abstain, so you only have three votes.
Okay, the motion doesn't have a quorum.
It doesn't go forward.
You're right. Thank you. Thank you for that. The motion doesn't pass because we don't have a majority.
Okay. Was that the mayor, the council member who's a mayor running the meeting? Okay,
yeah,
I don't know that guy at all. I didn't want to impugn his character, but it sounded like he was trying to railroad through this position against $30 tabs when, you know, that wasn't tough math there. You had six people, three were against $30 tabs, and three abstained, and he said it passes, and you're the one who had to catch that and correct him. Was that just an honest mistake?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what happened there was he was very sure that his motion was going to pass and was caught off guard when it didn't pass. In the past, you know, we've had many of these come before our council for resolutions, and in the past they have passed because only two of us have taken my position, myself and Jason Hearn. I think he was a little surprised when Linda Zeman abstained as well, so it threw him off guard there.
Okay, and so had you had conversations with your fellow council members about the positions you were all going to take?
Not specifically on this vote. I mean, I've certainly made my position clear many times over the last 8 years, whether it be on initiatives. I take that same position when they come before us for, you know, a bond or a levy or any of those things that are going to go before the voters. So the council is very aware of my position.
I find this very refreshing, Lenny, and I say this not to suck up to you, but to spotlight how increasingly rare this seems to be these days, where politicians are, you know, they absolutely believe that they have some moral or intellectual superiority that needs to be imparted on the electorate. And to hear somebody who says, no, that's not our job, I find that really refreshing.
Well, thank you. You know, I believe very firmly that it's our job to represent the people, not to think for them, not to educate them, as some might say, and certainly not to tell them how to vote. I mean, hey, what's next when we start taking positions on initiatives? What's next? Are we going to take positions from the dais about who they should vote for as well?
You heard my opening comments. There's a no campaign on $30 tabs that is under fire because it is so deceptive and has broken so many rules. The media clearly is against $30 tabs in total. There are some, you know, renegades like me out there. But not to talk about this particular issue because I don't even care about your opinion, but these are really perilous times when we have media and government colluding on so many things to try to control the populace. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I mean, I don't know. I probably haven't followed some of this as closely as you have, so I don't know if there's collusion between the two, but government and media. But I certainly have not seen much media in support of the initiative, that's for sure. So the media certainly has leaned in one direction. And from what I've seen, I've not seen councils, both either city or county councils, taking this up, looking at resolutions in support of the initiative. They've all been opposed. So, again, I just don't see where it's our place as an elected body to take positions at all on these things.
Amen.
We need to stay within our lane. You need to stay within passing ordinances and budgets and running the city, and not get involved in those things that are going to go before the voter. That's their decision to make, and it's our job to follow the will of the people.
Lenny, your breath of fresh air. I appreciate it. Thanks for the stand you took at the meeting, and thanks for coming on with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Lacey City Councilman Lenny Greenstein. And while government shouldn't tell us how to vote, I should vote yes for $30 tabs. Because this is just out of control. And like I said, when government and most of the media tell you to zig, you should probably zag. Let me know what you think. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead. You're on the Dory Monson Show. Destination. But this long line of cars. Some people in the text messages are a little confused. If I want $30 tabs, what do I vote for? You vote yes on Initiative 976 if you want $30 tabs. Now, again, everybody in the government is telling you, it'll be disastrous. It'll be catastrophic. Ah! Everybody in the media is taking that position. But if you want $30 tabs, it's very simple. You got to just vote yes for I-976. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see if the will of the people can overwhelm when government and media collude. Last week, on Seattle's Morning News, they had a guest, chief economist for Windermere, who said if people vote for $30 car tabs.
I think it is terrible. The effects are going to be potentially catastrophic. It will take out hundreds of millions of dollars away from the state transit budget. And that's going to be a problem. Why is that a problem? Well, we talk about prices of homes. The further you are away, the cheaper it becomes. You still have to get to your jobs. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is, it's going to cut back significantly on buses, but not just buses, on our existing road system, on our bridges.
Okay. The buses that are going to be cut, if any are, they can backfill it because they have a $3 billion surplus in Olympia. If any buses are cut, it'll be the ones at 10 p.m. at night that nobody rides, and the people who are on them are subject to the worst violence in the system. It's going to be catastrophic for housing prices. If $4 billion is returned from government control, which is the most non-productive way to spend money to you and me, being able to control it for our families, if we save, if you've got a husband, a wife, and a teenage kid, and you got your kid a car, and you're spending $800 between your three cars on car tabs because of the illegal valuation of your vehicles. And now all of a sudden it's going to be just $30 a vehicle. You know what? That's $710 more in your pocket that gets productively spent in the private sector. This would be a wondrous thing. So, yes, you want to vote yes on 976 if you want $30 tabs. And the big lead at two is next.